Hey everyone, welcome back to the Golfers Journal podcast presented by Titleist, the number one ball in golf. I'm Tom Coyne, senior writer at the Golfers Journal. Today we've got a fun conversation for you, talking to Chris Solomon, surely best known as a Golfers Journal contributor. You might also know him as Solly from No Laying Up. Chris wrote a fascinating story in Golfers Journal 13 about a golf bag unlike any other you've heard of. Hope you got a chance to see that story. He's going to tell us a little bit more about it, about the writing process, and about the bag and its journeys, its travels. It is a bag to envy for sure. But first, if you follow us, and you should, at Golfers Journal, you've probably been seeing these handsome scorecard holders. Now, these were custom made by Links and Kings for our premium subscribers. Very cool looking, have the broken tee right on them. So if you want one, all you got to do is become a premium subscriber. You'll get the scorecard holder and you'll get all the other gifts that we send to our premium subs from time to time. And if you already have a regular subscription, all you have to do is upgrade to premium, pay the difference, and we'll get one of these out to you right away. You know, when you think these gifts plus the Link Soul Cash that all our subscribers get, honestly, you probably make money on a subscription to the Golfers Journal. And now with all the new content on our digital platform, articles read by the authors, plus bonus mini pods, etc. I mean, it's a great package. So re-up your subscriptions if it's time, or hey, start a new one. While you're on golfersjournal.com doing all that, you've got to go check out the new fall gear that we have on the site. It's awesome. We got new Broken Tee Society stuff, member crew necks, Polar Tech rain gear, and a reverse weave hoodie. Yes, we have a hoodie. We have a few hoodies, probably. And this hoodie is the one that I plan to pretty much wear all winter long. So as we turn to colder golf weather, we've got stuff to keep you warm. You can be out there in the chill. You're going to be well outfitted. And of course, you're still going to be playing your Pro V1 and Pro V1X. Maybe a yellow one, as sort of the leaves are falling. Well, they're falling here at least. Because you play to prove your game, and Titleist keeps proving it year after year. And hey, by the way, Titleist just launched the new driver, the TSi. Wow. I got to hit it last week. Picked up 5 miles an hour ball speed on my first swing, which brought a tear to the eye. So just saying, this thing is hot, so check it out. Thanks to all our sponsors from the pages of the Golfers Journal, and those are Titleist, Link Soul, Scotty Cameron, Oakley, New York Private Bank and Trust, and Links and Kings. And thank you for listening and subscribing and making the articles and the photography and these conversations possible. So now let's share one. Here's a conversation with Chris Solomon, who learned of the power and the creativity and the kinship of the golf community of folks like you and like us. He learned it from a golf bag that's been around the world and back. All right, Solly, welcome back to the Golfers Journal podcast, my friend. Your favorite podcast in golf, we all know.
Absolutely. We modeled our podcast after you guys when we started it so much. So thank you, Tom. Great to be back with you.
There's no doubt about that. Yeah, man. So just really a lot to talk about today. Want to get into this wonderful story you've written in number 13, The Infinite Loop, which is just such a cool story about this golf bag, a golf bag that I encountered last year on my travels around America. First, actually, I want to ask you, how's the house coming, man? Because I'm kind of like an HGTV late night kind of guy, and I'm vicariously living through your house building experience. How's it going?
It's going really well so far. I couldn't have been more deaf to all of the things that go into a house before we started it. And now I am like, when I'm at other people's houses, I'm judging people's doorknobs and stuff now. I mean, I'm in deep. I've gone.
Yep.
It was like a 86-page customization process of building this house. And I've gotten kind of into it a little bit. My soon-to-be wife has great taste and has taught me a lot about maybe just kind of incepted a lot of thoughts into my mind as to what looks good and what doesn't. And I think we did pretty good. I mean, we selected a lot of stuff, but you don't really know until you see it. And it's as it unfolds piece by piece, we're actually pretty pretty excited about it all coming together. We're actually moving in the week after we get married. So we just decided to make all the big swings all at once this year and just have no money. So that's kind of where we're at.
Oh, that's awesome, man. And yes, and keep posting about the house, because I click on your stuff. I don't really care what you have to say about golf anymore. I want to see what drawer pulls did they pick. It is funny. You go to somebody's house now, right? And you're like, oh, they went for the high-end drawer pulls. Wow, that's it. That's a $300 upcharge, you know.
Oh, they got us on everything, man. I mean, it was like, yeah, all right, so that's going to add how much to the monthly mortgage? Like $1.50? Yeah, put that in there. Throw that in there. And when you do like hundreds of those, it's at the end of the day, it's like, oh, okay, yeah, honey, I think we kind of went pretty hard on this. But the real entertainment is going to come when I start the DIY projects, because I have no skills, but I've watched YouTube enough to gain an unjustifiable amount of confidence about doing some, adding some shelves and stuff like that. And it's probably going to be a disaster, but I'm actually weirdly confident that I can do it. So that's where the real fun's going to start.
Yeah, you know, just enough to just be a little dangerous, which is great. So we're looking forward to that. But let's talk about something far from home, something that's wandered all over the place. In the Infinite Loop in 13, you tell us about the Sisterhood of the Traveling Sunday Bag. I'm sure all the listeners have hopefully read it at this point, but 13's awesome if you haven't seen it yet, or you're awaiting it, or the Postal Service is still waiting, trying to get it to you. Sully has a fantastic story about a really unique golf bag that grew out of the message boards on No Laying Up. So tell folks, what is this bag?
The bag is... You know, I'm not sure if it comes across this way in the story, but the bag is only like a piece of the story to me. I mean, I knew about the bag. Like you said, it had kind of started on our message board where there was these ideas that kind of germinated. And I tried to trace it back to an original idea, but the idea was so reflective of the message board in general, because it was truly a combination of a lot of thoughts. It was this guy said this. This gal said this, this guy said this, and it added up into, we should do this. And a gentleman by the name of Alex Schreffler actually, you know, had gotten materials together to make his own golf bag. And he had enough for two. He had bought enough materials to actually make two golf bags. And so the idea ultimately germinated into, why don't we make a bag? And I say we, I say that word on purpose, because Alex, despite the fact that he built the bag, he truly views it as the community's bag. It's not his bag. He has people that come up and ask him questions about it. You know, what should I do with it? And he says, like, it's not mine. It belongs to the community. But the idea was, you could create a sign-up sheet, and we could, you know, all of us in this weird online community that some of us have met in person, some of us hadn't, but kind of have found fellowship in golf, if you will, through this weird online community. We're going to pass along this bag, and this bag is going to go to places that, you know, maybe not all of us will ever get to go, but there's going to be a story with it. And the Sisterhood of the Traveling Pants, but a golf bag that, you know, folds up pretty easily, ships out, and there's tons of mementos in it. And it's really, really cool. It just hit me right in the feels that, you know, somebody would, you know, kind of do this in a giving way towards this community of people that he really didn't know all that well, but kind of interacts with on a near daily basis online. And gosh, the more I kind of unpacked and talked with Alex about it, the more like this story just really hit me in the feels.
Yeah. The same for me, even just meeting it out there while I was traveling around the country. I mean, and not to beat the metaphor to death, but it does seem like the bag is this kind of, to me, felt like almost a symbol of where golf is now, or where golf is headed in its best sense, in terms of community, and this sort of new golf revolution, which again might be too grand a statement, but I think, you know, No Laying Up is a part of, the Golfers Journal is a part of, where the golf community exists outside of country clubs, and it exists in other places, online message rooms, etc. And the bag kind of, to me, was this sort of physical manifestation of that.
That's exactly kind of why it hit me, but it also just hit me because Alex himself is self-admitted to be relatively new to the game of golf in terms of it being a true passion. He, you know, kind of played some as a kid, and that's where it really got me. It was just like, wait a second here. This dude like did all this, put all this together, yet he's really just kind of getting into golf, just starting to scratch the itch. He didn't really have, admittedly doesn't have like a full understanding of everything in golf, but is learning and is making every effort to learn, and kind of used to be more of a hunter and fisher, but all of a sudden he, you know, has this itch for golf that, you know, a lot of his close friends in person did not have. So he kind of struggled to find that bond with other people that kind of really, the golf sickos, the nerds that really, it's the indescribable feeling. The best I can describe it is like there's two types of golfers. It's when you're walking through a busy city street, you either are, you're just walking through it, or you're picturing trying to carve an 8-iron through a couple buildings up there. And that's like the true sickos. And I'm definitely one of the sickos. Everywhere I go, I start picturing golf shots. And I felt like, and Alex felt like he had this awakening happening within him, within golf. And that's the part of the story that just felt so cool to me. It was like, holy crap. There's, you know, there's so many barriers to entry with golf. And I have been blessed that I, you know, picked up the game when I was a kid. I played competitively as a junior on a very small scale. But like, I was fortunate enough to develop that skill and get the interest in golf at a very young age, and had parents that were willing to support that, you know, hobby. And that has paid off greatly for me in my later life, that I have skipped past this learning curve. Like I know how to do these things. I know how to hit a golf ball. And when I look at, say, a 25-year-old that doesn't have that experience, I look at him kind of like, you know what, man, like, golf, yeah, I'd love to just be able to tell you, yeah, go play golf, you're going to love it. But like, there's a tough learning curve that comes with it, a part of feeling uncomfortable, feeling unwelcome, losing golf balls, feeling like you're holding people up, all that. And I understand people that aren't willing to clear that hurdle. But here was this guy who like was diving in, you know, head first into this pool and saying like, I'm in on all this. Like, I'm done. I'm tired of sucking. I'm going to practice. I'm going to play golf. And the fact that it came from someone like that just meant a lot more to me, and kind of what made the story what it is, I think, was the fact that it was this guy that was pretty new to the game of golf, yet had picked up on so many of the nuances already, and had found this weird community and this group of people that all were so enthusiastic about it. And gosh, the thing has already gone so far, and it's just really the tip of the iceberg, I think, that what this community is going to be capable of putting together.
Absolutely. And that is good for Alex, right? Because so I was out last week with a friend of ours who is, you know, 20 handicap, good swing, taking tons of lessons, invested so much in equipment, brought him out to Waynesboro where I play, and he just wants to be good so badly. And he has, you know, he has all the potential in the world. But watching him, and, you know, sort of struggle, partly because he wanted to show us that he could play now, because he'd put so much effort into the game. And on the 18th hole, he sculled one out of the bunker, into the parking lot, hit a car. It was like the worst, most tragic end to a really tough day, and walked off. And it just, the despair, right? Like you said, I mean, golf is hard. And all the credit to folks who are willing to hang in there. It's going to get easier. It's going to get better. But to start out and not be discouraged, particularly if you're hanging around people who grew up playing or can play, those barriers to entry, you know, now that golf is so popular because of, you know, COVID, that, well, at least we should say that the demand is so high. You know, how do we keep people playing and keep people coming back when golf is a pretty unforgiving game? It's, you know, it's tough.
Can I ask you a question, Tom? How often you play a lot of golf? What would you say the percentage chance of rounds you walk off the golf course feeling like you played good, solid, I'm happy with the way I played today? What do you think that percentage is?
It's low. I would say 10%.
Okay. I was going to say 20. Like, I think like 20%, like, obviously there's an upper 10%, but like 20% of the time I'm like, you know what? That's pretty good. So to imagine this, and I think about this a lot. Like, back when I had a desk job, I got to play way less golf than I currently get to, obviously. And I would maybe get out once on a weekend. If I was really lucky, I got to play both days on a weekend, right? So let's say I played five times in a month. That means of all of this time I spend thinking about golf, I get one round per month where I walk off like feeling satisfied. And the other four, like I spent money, I lost golf balls. You know, I dedicated time to driving there. I carved out time in my calendar, did that. And you walk off kind of upset. So like these barriers to entry are not even necessarily like even for players that play pretty well, like you walk off the golf course kind of upset, not upset. Like if you can play poorly and still accept it very well, but you don't get that satisfaction that you're truly searching. So that is just one more thing that is just really hard for beginners or people with not a lot of experience. It's like, yeah, this game is going to punch you in the face. And if you're not like fully prepared for that, then I could easily understand why. I don't understand how all the numbers work of people that leave the game, et cetera, but I can understand the people that used to play five times a year that play zero, how that happens. Because like for even for you and I that play as much golf as we do, we still walk off over 80% of the time not feeling like we fulfilled our capabilities or, you know, played to the level that we should play at.
Absolutely. And I think that that's why bringing it back to the bag, I mean, that's what's so wonderful and cool and important about it, because it doesn't have anything to do with score. Right. And it still connects you to the game and connects you to people. Score, and I know that we're chasing numbers often in our game, trying to see if we're improving, what's happening, you know, with the work that we're putting in. But aside from that, the people, the community, those are the things that are always satisfying, right? That 100% of the time you generally come off the golf course feeling like, you know, I'm glad I spent that time with that person, or I've made a new friend or contact or whatever. That's what's so great about Alex's story, that's really what it's about, the people. And, you know, I was out there when I'm traveling around. So I got to, and thank you for mentioning in the story that I carried it for the first round at Rough Creek National, some guy's backyard, which was, you know, it was a thrill to be there and play it with Ben for the first time. But Christian, one of your refugees, had the bag with him. So that was my first experience meeting it. And then actually, again, I ran into it in Arizona later in the year with Christian, who I'd met at your event in Colorado at Common Ground, which was awesome. And he was carrying it that day. And it was funny. We were playing Mountain Shadows, their short course. And it's not a walking – it's a short course, but it's not – you have to take a cart because it's just spread around the property, like on different sides of the hotel and stuff. So, but Christian was adamant he was not going to strap that bag to a cart. He would not. So like he's taking all these long walks. Like he was literally jogging to try and keep up with us to get to the tee, because he was taking his mission so seriously that he had been entrusted with the bag for that time, which is
as he should. It's just that awesome. Thing needs to be as carried. That thing needs to be carried, man. There are a lot of love went into that thing. And you know what's really cool about it too is, so there's a lot of like mementos and keepsakes in it. You know, you're supposed to add something to the bag, and at least when I carried it, it was getting a little heavy. People were starting to add maybe some more bulky stuff, a ball mark or a scorecard or something. But the guest book in it is just like warms my heart. And I can't wait to see the bag again, to pick the guest book back up and read all the journal entries from it, the stories of the places it's been. I know DJ used it in season 5 of Taurus Sauce. He had an all-in match against Tron, and he was carrying the Sunday bag during that match in our video, and he beat Tron, and he just signed it. Like, if you're reading this, you already know, like, I've dispatched of TC, he is gone. And like those little quirks to it. You know, I actually felt a little bit of pressure writing about my experience carrying the bag, which I got to do at the Ringer at the Dormy Club in last fall, just because it was like, oh, this is going to be, you know, who knows how long this thing's going to be in existence, and everyone's going to read this. And it's, people take this thing very seriously. And it was like legitimately an honor to have been asked to carry the bag. And you know, I want to do it again sometime. I'm not sure what the rules are on two-time use. But the beauty of this thing is, like, anyone listening to this can go into our message board and sign up to use this thing. I suggest getting caught up on all the rules and all the things that come with it, which are very understandable. But basically, like, hey, use the sign up sheet. If you're going somewhere cool, you know, somebody will ship it to you. You're responsible for shipping it to the next guy, and blah, blah, blah. But it's just, I don't know. It makes me so, it's one more thing to make me excited about golf. The fact that it can bring all these people together. There's not one other thing in the world that would have, you know, brought these random people together in the way that it has, other than golf. Like, and I say this all the time, like, we just get to meet, I know DJ says this all the time, we get to meet people every day of our lives that if golf didn't exist, we would have never, ever crossed paths with so-and-so in Australia or so-and-so in Abu Dhabi or all that. And it's just, golf can, we could use some feel-good stuff in the game or in life in general this year. And this was one of the things that hit me hard.
You're right. No doubt about it. Yeah, without golf, I'd be living in a cave somewhere writing haiku, or I don't know what I'd be doing. But yeah, writing in the journal, that was really funny when Christian brought it out. He's like, you know, put something in it. And he thought, I felt the same pressure, right? Because this is like, it's a time capsule.
Right.
And you don't know who's going to see it or how long it's going to be around. I'm sure I just wrote something, you know, very banal, but I was one of those people. I put a TC ball in the bag, so I helped it get a little heavier.
Yeah,
there.
You're one of those guys.
I was one of those guys. I a couple copies of A Course Called Scotland I slipped in there. Always be closing. So it was pretty cool. But you mentioned, you know, you've talked about the refuge. And that, you know, when you start no laying up, I don't know, what point did the refuge come in and how has it really taken off? It's a rabbit hole that I've gone on a few afternoons have gone down, and you can go down it quite deeply. And it seems there are, you know, there are definitely some voices there that seem to inhabit it, you know, that it seems as if folks live there, but or everyone's sort of tied in to what's happening on the refuge. How often do you go in there and what's your reaction to what's happened with your message board?
I mean, just first of all, starting it was, you know, something we wanted to do way back before this was a full-time job for us, but just didn't have the capacity, didn't have the understanding of how to do it. And I mean, everyone, you know, had reached out, everyone that we had talked to about, it's like, don't do a message board. Like it's just, everything ends up with politics and you got to ban people and people will hate the, you know, the banning decisions and the moderation. It's just it's a nightmare. And we've experienced some of that, of course. I can see where these people are coming from. But we started it, I think, around, I want to say the spring of 2018 when we were just setting up shop here in Florida. And it was honestly kind of sprung out of the conversation on Twitter was starting to turn very people. I don't know what happened. I think it was honestly post-election in 2016. I feel like Twitter just changed and people got so much more combative and it was a lot less enjoyable, even at a dumb, like tiny little hobby like golf in the grand scheme of the world. It just was like, man, yep. I feel like we kind of lost the plot of the conversation here. And we wanted somewhere to take, you know, the minority, the small minority of fans that maybe aren't our biggest diehards, that aren't, you know, as engaged, are the ones that have become the most vocal on Twitter. And we've kind of maybe lost a little bit of touch with our people that have been following us for a long time and the most thoughtful people that we have. And a way to kind of weed out some of the people on Twitter that are, you know, maybe that we weren't the most excited to interact with, I was like, why don't we bring them into the message board and like see, you know, you give way more opportunity with more than 280 characters to kind of flesh out thoughts. You could talk about topics other than golf. And let's just kind of use this as a sounding board. You know, we can bounce ideas off this group of people. Didn't really have any expectations. There's no business purpose really for the refuge for us. It's just kind of like a cool community thing. And, you know, the conversation, like within a month, we were like, man, did you see this post on the refuge? Like, this is hilarious. Look at this. Like, we're getting roasted in there, but in the best possible way. This is so much fun. And it just kind of grew and grew and grew. And we were honestly kind of like, dude, we don't want this to get too big. Like, we kind of like, you know, the community that's forming here. But the things that happened very quickly was like, had this roll call section where people could say, hey, roll call, New Orleans. I live in New Orleans. I'm always looking for people to play golf with. And like, I play Audubon Park all the time. Oh, cool. So do I. You want to meet up on Thursday? And these games started forming all over the country. And we were just sitting around watching this. Like, how cool is this that it's happening somehow through us? We're not doing anything. All we did was set up the infrastructure of this thing. And these people are all meeting and, you know, interacting on a day-to-day basis. And it turns out, like, you know, these, a lot of people have become really good friends with each other, even and having only met once or twice, maybe in person. These kind of golf tea times that were happening ended up changing into actual events and duels that happened because of it. I mean, you know, people were kind of bickering back and forth. Laz and Nanderson were bickering back and forth, and Laz challenged him to a duel, and they all met up and played at this duel, and a bunch of people followed it and all this stuff. And then some guy's backyard kind of happens. You know, guys in Kansas City were looking to build a golf course and wanted to pick the brains of people on the message board of how to, you know, agronomy questions, design questions, blah, blah, blah. And it's just taken off and had this life that we could not have possibly thought. And when, again, I bringing it back to the story is when I heard this, the traveling Sunday bag kind of was efforted through the message board and through that community, because the story is about the bag as well, but it's also about the community, right? And how it's, dude, I don't have a better word for it other than it's like, it's just kind of weird. Like, it's weird to meet people online and have it be so not weird. Like, I remember the first time I met DJ Pi in person was at St. Andrews in 2015. And like, we just like walked up to each other, and like we planned to meet up, and we walked up to each other on the corner there by the Dunn Vegan and just started talking right away. And I was like, hey, nice to meet you. And he was like, oh yeah, like we've never met in person. And like, how many times we have, you know, hey, I'm going to play golf with some guy from Twitter. Like, do you know him? Oh no, I haven't met him yet. But like, we're going to go play golf. And the looks you get when you say that, but it's not weird. For some reason, it's not weird. And this refuge community is kind of a manifestation of, just people that are seeking, you know, kind of see golf on the same weird wavelength. Like I said, the people that, you know, are going through a busy street corner and picturing golf shots. That's the kind of people that I think this message board pulls in and allows them to interact with each other and kind of form this weird community. That's the best word I could have for it, is community.
Community. It is weird. I mean, gosh, that's certainly, I know that experience so well, because the, you know, between the refuge, Instagram, whatever, you know, last year I'm playing 90% of my golf with three people that I only met online or through the refuge or whatever. Cause some of your folks were really generous when I announced a course called America. They threw it up on the message board, and I got, you know, hundreds of recommendations for places to play or invitations, and folks came out to meet me. And, you know, but it's funny. Yeah. You've texted or messaged with people for months, and then you actually meet them in person. Right. And it's sort of like, wait, I know you, I don't know you, this is a little awkward, I feel like we should be texting each other instead of talking to each other. But the most wonderful thing about it is that they're all good people, and at the end of the day, it just feels totally natural, which is a great sort of club. I mean, this sort of virtual golf club that's out there in the universe now, you know, thanks to something like the Refuge. And it's funny, I went I got involved with Laz. I didn't know Laz, and he was chatting about, you know, the duel, throwing out some challenges. My name got put in there, I guess, because of Paper Tiger, you know, can he really play, whatever, whatever. And so I started talking a little bit of smack, and Laz excels at the talking of the smack. And so suddenly now I'm challenged to come after the trophy, which I think COVID interrupted our potential duel, but I actually then had a chance. So then I'm asking people, I'm like, what, who is this guy? Like, is he a stick? Is he, you know, like, I was kind of like, what have I gotten myself into? And then had the chance to actually meet him. Again, a lot of refugees came out in LA at Penmar by the Sea. And one of the best guys I met on the whole trip. So, you know, it's really, these communities provide us a lot of, there's a lot of gifts to it for sure.
Well, I try to think of this too, you know, as weird as I think it is. And again, weird might not be the right word though. It also makes total sense. Like, why, how else, like, what else do you do in your life, your normal everyday life that has nothing to do with golf? How often do you meet just like a golfer that is on the same like wavelength as you are, or even in the same realm? Right. I mean, like, again, my old desk job, like I met one or two guys that, you know, definitely loved to play on weekends and were really into it, but still not nearly to this, the nerd extent that I was willing to go to. So like, it makes a ton of sense that you would have to go to like an online golf community to find people that, you know, will drive 5 hours to play in 45 degree weather with you, as Alex says in the story as well. And that, you know, that part at least makes sense to me, but at the same time, it's just not how we're used to making friends or interacting, with people, you know, in the past. I think, you know, 2020, maybe not 2020, let's say up to 2019, that was a very normal, it's starting to become a more and more normal thing to, like, I guess, use the internet in very powerful ways.
Yeah, I mean, it's easier to find your tribe now, yes, right? You know, like, we were just at the Ballyhack 2-man for the Golfers Journal, and there's just this sense of, like, you get there, and you're like, all right, here's, like, 60 like-minded people, and it just, you just relax. You know, you exhale. You're like, these are my people. I don't know any of them, but, you know, I'm just going to roll up and join them and play the short course, or I'm not worried about who I'm going to get paired with, because we all kind of look at or feel about golf in a similar way, which is just, it's wonderful. And I also have to say one thing that's, I think, very effective, why your message board, where the bag has come from, is really successful. It seems to be somewhat self-moderated, and it's well-moderated. Like you said, there's, if someone comes out with a take, I've noticed, that is angry or political or has just gone a little too far, it seems like the folks in the thread kind of call that out and just say, that's, like, not what we do here. And so the community kind of self-polices it, which is, that's pretty impressive and mature and quite nice to see, actually.
Yeah, for the most part, it self-moderates really well. You know, sometimes guys will just tattle on each other and flag posts that they, if somebody gets roasted too hard, they'll, you know, and owned pretty hard, they'll flag it and get a little defensive. But I thought we'd have more issues moderating, and there's been some somewhat serious issues that are related to the moderation side of it. But for the most part, man, it's, you know, it's pretty amazing. We actually elected our first president. Actually, I should say the community elected their first president of the refuge that started his term July 1. That was Double Bogey Dave. Ran a great campaign, had my endorsement as well, and he serves a 6-month term as the president, and I don't know what our term limit rules are, if he's running again here in the fall for next year's term, but it's kind of taking, like, making something super hyper serious like that is clearly not very serious, is a fun little twist to it.
That's awesome. You're going to need some bylaws and a constitution, man.
we need a debate. That's what a live debate.
Yeah. Oh, that's great. We should tell people what's the bag look like? Because I think it was a nice bag to carry. I wonder if he's going to make more or try and sell them, or what's the physical bag itself? What's going on there?
So it's like an olive green canvas kind of color, is the overriding, you know, thing you see, with some brown patches on it. I don't know exactly what the material is. Do you? I probably should. I wrote the damn story, but
it feels like some sort of waxed canvas kind of
what
thing.
What I was going for there. Know? Some hand sewn buttons on it. It's got two big pockets on it, and it just looks like, you know, he got one of the inspiring ideas he had was from a hunting forum that Alex used to be a part of. That, you know, this manufacturer would make two bows, and one of the bows he would send the community would share, and you would use it for a month, and you would kind of document what you were able to hunt using those bows in that time period, and you would pass along to the next guy. And honestly, I look at it and I kind of see, like, an arrow quiver, or a plate. It just kind of seems like something you throw over your back and have a bunch of arrows in. And it does have a, I don't know, maybe it's a Jones bag, a over the shoulder strap to it that he has latched onto it. But for the most part, man, it looks weathered, which is cool. It doesn't look like a brand new golf bag. It looks like it's seen some things, and it has seen some things since it's been built. But even at the first round, just kind of looks like an antique. It looks like something you would ask a question about, like, what is this? Why do you have this bag? Which, you know, it doesn't look like anything you could buy on a shelf. That's for sure. It doesn't look like a McKenzie golf bag, or, you know, any of the designer, you know, high end carry bags or anything like that. It is truly unique, and I wouldn't even know what to really compare it to. It looks More like a traveler's, sack that they would throw over their shoulder than it does an actual golf bag. And I mean that in the most endearing way.
Yeah, right. It almost looks like something march into battle with in like World War One or something.
Yes.
And it has like a real utilitarian kind of vibe to it, which is really
and the
cool.
Journal in there is kind of like your, you know, your love letters back home. Like, like we've advanced on the
mama
front
today. Yeah.
Rations are low.
Yeah. Totally. The I hope, yeah, it's like, oh, he could probably sell a bunch of them, but that would, I suppose, spoil it because it should be a one-off kind of thing.
If anyone I've met that has no interest in making a profit or you know, reaping the personal rewards of something like this, yeah. It's someone like Alex. So I would be very surprised if he sold anything like this, because I truly just think that passionate people just get me fired up, you know, and passionate people about golf makes my job feel it makes it feel a lot more fulfilling. I mean, it's like I'm sure you feel the same way. It's like cheating being able to call what we do work, and it just gives you that sense of like, dude, like, no, this does matter to people. Like this is a silly game and it's a hobby, but like, look at this effort that this person is making. It makes me feel a lot better. I don't want to say the word fulfilled about golf. Like, I feel extremely fulfilled being able to do what I do, but it makes it feel less silly and less like, right. It makes it just adds meaning to it in a really weird way. And you know, he told me this story when we were sitting at Pinehurst, and I'm sitting there with like my eyes just like kind of wide open to it. Like, here, I knew about this bag. How did I know about this bag and didn't know any of these things behind it that really made it made the bag actually come to life? And that's why I tried my best to make it come to life in the story, and hopefully, and the podcast helps being able to speak out on kind of what it triggered internally in me as a golf fan helps me feel, I feel a lot better about, kind of displaying why this story mattered to me.
And it does. And you said that very well, but because I feel the same way when someone has a passion for something like the traveling bag or a piece in the golfer's journal or a book or whatever, and you realize, okay, this wasn't just me being like self-indulgent and waxing about, you know, what I love to do, that it actually matters to other people. That kind of connection is, I mean, it keeps you going, man. I'm so thankful when anyone takes the time to reach out and say, hey, me too. Like, I get it. Like, I'm part of this. And that mattered to me that you wrote that or you said that. It's pretty powerful and it keeps you going. It's inspiring.
Sure.
So yeah, I guess we should tell folks, where's it been? It's been everywhere, or hasn't it been?
Well, that's the hard thing about, you know, writing a story in the Golfer's Journal too, is as I'm writing about where it's been, I know that, you know, it takes a few months to get these stories out and published into the world. Just that's the nature of, you know, magazine writing. So I was like, man, by the time I list out all the places it's been, I'm terrified to know, it's like, to leave something out, like an amazing place that it's been that, I haven't documented in here. But unknowingly, COVID kind of, I would imagine, played a little role in limiting where it's been since then. But it's been to Cabot, it's been to Iceland, it's been to Scotland. It had plans to go to the Emirates. I don't know if it made it to the Emirates. I don't think it had by the time I wrote the story. No, I guess, yeah, Dubai Creek Golf Club and Yacht Club was the 16th place it went. It was first carried at the Preserve at Bandon Dunes. Like I said, it was used at Pinehurst. It was used at Wilmington Municipal. I used it at the Dormy Club. And the story kind of, it's been carried at Paso Tiempo. That was the 12th place it went. The story kind of bounces around showing some of the places that it has been. And it is honestly, truly just getting started. I'd have to pull up the spreadsheet. I mean, it was, when I was writing the story, it was scheduled out for months. I mean, it was like, hey, I'm going to be here this time and I want the bag. And it was months out in advance that people were kind of making these requests and signing up for it. So if you are interested in getting involved with this, I would recommend finding the spreadsheet and get your name on it as early as you can, because it's the popularity of it is definitely growing.
I love it in the story. I think it's Alex who says, when I want to be reincarnated, as I want to come back as this bag. It's so great. I mean, that thing, it's out traveled us, and we travel for golf a little bit. So that's so cool. Let it keep going around the world. And talking about writing a story in the Golfer's Journal, I just want to finish by asking you a little bit about that process. You know, obviously you pitched it to Travis, our editor, as you said, because the story means so much to you and there's so much in it. This is your second story in the Golfer's Journal. This one, you know, another kudos to you, man. Another great piece, again, showing off not only podcasting and interviewing skills, but you're good with the word, with the written word. So it's awesome to see. But in this one, there's some reporting, there's quotes, you're setting scenes, you know, this is like, you're taking a little bit to the next level. What was the process, the writing process like?
Well,
for you?
I cannot take credit for like the words and the writing, because that's Travis working his magic, because I'm not a great writer. I openly say that and admit that, and you're going to probably try to convince me that I'm better than I am, but I can flesh my thoughts out so much better via audio than I can via writing, and trying to find the balance between like using a quote from Alex versus like taking what he told me and turning it into words. I really struggled with kind of finding that balance, and then the structure of the storytelling and all that is it's just challenging for me. It's difficult, and I have no formal training in any of that. And it's not what I would call a skill set, but I like challenging myself to do these kinds of things, because I'm not afraid to, you know, try something and fail. And Travis is such a great guy to work with in terms of piecing a story together, because I will throw something down, it feels completely unpublishable or unshareable, and he'll say, no, like, send it my way and we'll work on it together. I'll kind of give you feedback on it and all that. And it is a comforting feeling to know, like, I'm sometimes embarrassed to kind of send something over that is as half baked as it is. But I just get to a certain point every time of like, I need some direction here. I need to know if do I need to keep going on this wavelength, or do I need to completely shift this over to something else? And like I said, it's not something I pride myself on too much, but I appreciate and relish the opportunity to, you know, do something in a magazine I don't even want to call it a magazine. It's like a publication that is as renowned as the Golfer's Journal and as solid as the Golfer's Journal. And it's a different pressure to know like who you're going to be in between on some of these pages and how many people are going to read it. And, you know, if it's not something you can go in and edit, like everything online, you can go edit. Like I can go say, I predicted the 2015 Masters champion, and, you know, I edit that online article. It doesn't work that way in print, man. It's going to be there forever. And it's very different than what I do on a day-to-day basis. So I really appreciate Travis's willingness to, I'm going to throw some like really bad ideas at him and just see if he is just lets me do anything I want, or if he actually really loves the ideas that I bring to him.
Well, hey, keep coming on the podcast and we might just let you do whatever you want. But it's totally a process, and we all have editors, and it'll be interesting, I think, in your progression as a writer to see those things that Travis, told you on your first story, your second story, how they sort of become incorporated in what you do. And with each piece, you probably, you know, and that's been my experience as a writer with each book or each draft or each magazine story, you need less nudging or direction because you've gotten so much direction.
That's
all the way
through.
That's
what thought was going to happen with this story. Like, all right, I've written a story for Travis before. I know what he's looking for. I can do this the second time around. And I ran into the same brick wall doing this one of like, oh God, in my head, I thought I could piece this all together. But it just takes confidence too. You have to be, confidence is going to kind of open up a vision for how the storytelling aspect of it goes. And that's something I still want to keep working on. And I'll keep trying as long as you guys will have me.
Yeah. I meant like hundreds of stories that it'll
no,
get
no,
easier.
My second one, I should have had this totally figured out.
But it is a really great read, and we're thrilled to have you back in the book. So, and back on the podcast as well, Sally, can't thank you enough, for your time. Always great speaking with you, my friend. And thanks for being back, and we'll talk again soon.
Yeah,
I hope.
Thank you, honestly, a true thank you to all you guys do for golf and the itch that you guys scratch for so many golfers. You spoke to it earlier about the event you were at, you know, Ballyhack, and kind of being around that community of people. And I know you guys are kind of feeling the same thing that we feel in that regard, of just how fortunate we are to have found people like those people, and the people that are listening to this, and people that read the publication every quarter, and listen to these podcasts and all that stuff. It's just, it makes, yeah, like I said earlier, just makes our jobs and lives that much more fulfilling. And we appreciate all of that from everyone.
Thanks, Ali. Oh, and by the way, speaking of Ballyhack, did you hear who put his name on the trophy right by DJ?
I saw the photo. Okay, congratulations.
Just check.
Did you make a hole in one too recently?
I did on the short course at Ballyhack. I'm not going to talk about how long the hole was. But,
okay. Can we talk about this? Sorry, before we go, do you count it as a hole in one?
Yeah. Yes. It was off a tee. It went in a hole.
Okay.
What else am I going to call it?
See,
what do you
I
do?
Just, well,
I
this,
mean, you've done this on some
this
short
This just
courses,
happened
so.
To me, and I've been adamant that like a par three course or short course hole in one is not a hole in one. And I've been on this case, and then it happened to me at Bannon Preserve. I made one from 65 yards. And I listen, we had a celebration. It was really fun. It was awesome.
Yeah.
It took nothing away from the moment. I hit one shot and it went in the hole. It was awesome. But I struggle to count it as a hole in one.
You know, I got a glass that said hole in one on it from Ballyhack.
Okay.
That's cool. They have a little board there that my name will be on from holes in one on the goat track, which is what they call the short course. So I got paint, and that's what we're in this for. You know what I'm saying?
Not to be a stickler on this, but I always say a hole in one, it's got to be written on a scorecard. I don't know if you're keeping a scorecard out there on the short course, but yeah.
No. So that's a fair point. I also didn't open the bar because we were giving out, well, one, there were 60 drinkers there, and two, we were giving out free drinks, right? So those blue tickets.
Yeah, that'd be interesting to see how adamant you would have been about that being a hole in one if you needed to pay a bar tab on that. You'd be like, oh, right. No, guys, this is a short course. Come on.
Yeah, right. No, it didn't count. No. So I just asked everyone to take another blue ticket on.
Well, congratulations. That is awesome.
Thanks, man. Everyone, keep an eye out for the traveling Sunday bag. We'll see it out there somewhere around the world. And thanks again for everyone for listening. We'll see you next time on the Golfers Journal podcast.
Thanks, Tom.